Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.tv radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.tv radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today we're pre-recording an interview with a really dear friend of mine and a great activist, Charlotte Anthony. She is a permaculturist and an ecosystems farmer. I invited her on the show because she understands really basically how to remediate and how to heal our earth. So, welcome, Charlotte. Thank you for joining us on our show.
Yes, and thank you very much, Lonnie, for inviting me.
Well, look, the last time we were talking, and this is why I asked you back on, I had recently interviewed Chuck Hindman, who actually sells probiotics to people to pour on their gardens and in their houses. He sells a machine that can clean your air, the air in your home. And you were talking to me about how it's really possible to reestablish the ecosystems, to clean out the toxins, and how we can clean up our food supply. Why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and about some of the activities that you're currently engaged in right now?
We're going to have a little smaller bite, but
okay.
I'll start with my what I'm doing currently, which is I'm doing a farm in eastern Oregon, which is called Caralingua Farm. And I learned this kind of ecosystem farming in India, where they've been doing it for thousands of years. And what they're doing there is really working with the microbes and getting the microbes so that you don't need to use fertilizer and you don't need to use pesticides or even water for your plants. This was a very exciting concept for me, and I decided to, as I usually do, take it to the limit, which means I went into a desert, which is in Kimberley. The water every year is 8 to 14 inches. In Eugene, it's more like 45 inches in a year.
Wow.
So that's what I'm doing, and then I'll just talk to what you were talking about detoxifying, because that's a really issue these days, what with the contamination from Fukushima, the contamination from, let's say, 80 things, but probably it's a lot more than that. And I want to talk about another project that I'm assisting with. I came to the East Coast as a vacation, and I got all excited here by a project they're calling YIMBY, which is, yes, in my backyard. And I guess the big YIMBY project has to do with putting houses on your, extra houses on your lot to help the housing crisis in various places. Hmm. But this YIMBY is putting natives and perennials, taking out your lawn and putting in natives and perennials. And there's
what do you mean by that, natives? What do you mean by natives? What's that mean?
Native plants.
Okay.
Natives, the plants. So, and there's some assumption that the native plants are the ones that know how to detoxify the best. And then, you know, that as a culture, we're taking out all our native plants. So we're taking out some of our help for detoxifying the world. Plants have always done this job, but of course there's a much bigger job to do right now. And at the same time, we're decimating our plants, including the Amazon. We're decimating our plants around the world. So it's not a good combination.
Definitely not a good combination. So what you're suggesting is that we take up the grass in our lawns and replant indigenous plants that were here prior to putting in the lawns?
Yes. Well, and mainly the idea of that is that we plant plants that have root systems that can actually sequester carbon and detoxify our environment. There's a lot of evidence that says, you know, that these plants can make a sound barrier that just by sitting with these plants. So even if you had just a 6-foot area, you could sit in the middle of that area and, you know, the plants would detoxify. The air would, you know, make a sound barrier that would heal you. Just all sorts of things that would, oh. And the other biggest thing that I just found out, I mean, I've known it. I think, as you know, Lonnie, I used to be a chiropractor. And I quit being a chiropractor because everybody was sick. And they would just stay minimally healthy by coming to me. Whereas I wanted them to get thriving and, you know, luxuriously healthy. And that they didn't have time for that because of the rat race that they were on. But one of the things that I was noticing, I was raised in a community. Well, I early in my life moved to a community that we really wanted to get our nutrition from our food. So we didn't want to take a lot of supplements. And what I saw when I was practicing as a chiropractor is that even the people that were eating organically weren't getting the nutrition that they needed. And now I've found out why that is. So I should talk about that, right?
Okay.
So what happens is that the plant's digestive system, most of it is outside of the plant, and it's in what we call their microbe partners. How industrial food and even organic food is grown is with tilling, with bare ground, which kills the microorganisms in that soil. And so most of the food that we eat is grown without microbe partners. And when that food is grown with microbe partners, there's especially something called secondary plant metabolites. And what those do is they feed our microbiome, which is in our bellies, and that's how we can fight cancer, Alzheimer's, heart disease, all of our chronic, that's our microbiome was meant to fight all of those things, but isn't able to do that job anymore because it's not getting those secondary plant metabolites because the plants aren't making them because they don't have these microbe partners.
That's why people need to pour microbes on their gardens?
Yes.
Because I noticed that when I put microbes on my gardens, man, they just explode. The roots, the plants are just 3 times the size that they normally were.
Yes. And, I mean, and also that's related to they can resist. So they have, when they have their microbe partners, they can resist all sorts of pests. And there's even a group here called the Bionutrient Association that's going so far as to say, if your plants are attracting pests, they're not meant for human consumption. In other words, the pests are there to take care of the problem plants, and the healthy plants won't attract these pests.
Huh.
And there's a whole mechanism for that too, but we don't need to do that.
So how does spraying pesticides set that? That must set offset the whole system. When you spray a pesticide to kill so-called pests, it allows the unhealthy plants to continue to grow.
Exactly. And it also kills whatever microbes you had in your soil, because the pesticides kill and the fungicides kill the microbes.
Oh, I did not know that. So that's part of the offense of pesticides, is they kill the microbes.
Yes.
Wow. This is why we have this huge problem with food that grows with no nutrition inside of it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes.
That's why people that's why you go to the store, you buy these GMO foods, your gullet gets filled, but your nutritional, the things that they tell us are in there are minimal. It's half of what there should be in there, in other words.
Yes, and some of what I was studying at this one conference I was at is that cows will go to certain plants when they need something. And we've heard stories like that all our lives. Horses know what to do when they're sick, and they go to the plants that feed them. But if the plants that we're eating look like plants that have what we need but aren't, and that, in fact, is what's happening. Everybody's really hooked on sugar. All these strange food fads are because we don't have the tastes anymore that link us to the foods that we need.
What do you mean, the tastes? What does that mean?
The taste, you know?
Yeah, you mean like if we had not, is this what happens? Like my son-in-law has in the last 2 years totally eliminated sugar from his diet. I mean 100% will not eat. He doesn't even eat honey. He does not eat any of that. He's actually much healthier. He doesn't have back pains anymore. He used to have severe back pains. He's not overweight, but he used to not be able to sleep well. He had back pains, restlessness. It was so severe for him, it made him get really extreme with his diet. So one of the things that really changed in his life was the absolutely zero tolerance for sugar. He does not, even on birthday cakes, he won't take a bite of a birthday cake because he just, it causes a negative. How he puts it is he's allergic to sugar. I should think it sounds like most people are allergic to sugar.
Yes, and some people can get away with eating more than others. I mean, but we have probably the highest diabetic population in the world, and maybe the highest sugar consumption. I don't know that. India, where I was, they had a huge sugar consumption also. So, yeah, I don't know those things. But
so
it is amazing. I actually have had a lot of joint pain lately, and I was taking a supplement, which, again, I say I don't want to take supplements, but I was taking glucosamine. And then somebody told me that when she quit eating gluten, all of her joint aches went away. Mm-hmm. So I have tried to be gluten-free, but I cheat. And just in the last 3 weeks, I've totally gone off gluten. And I am totally pain-free, but I haven't stopped my glucosamine yet. So in another couple of weeks, I'll try that.
I know this for my own joint pain. Apple cider vinegar 3 or 4 times a day really has helped. It almost did reverse my arthritis when I was younger. That's how I was getting kinesiology, but I think the apple cider vinegar 4 times a day probably did a lot for me.
Yeah.
And I know right now I'm fighting a cold, some kind of a grunge that's happened, and I think it's low-level radioactive contamination, to be honest. Everybody has it. But I have this tincture that I'm making with lemon, vinegar, apple cider vinegar, cayenne pepper, and ginger. And I'm taking it 3 or 4 times a day. It's definitely clearing up my chest. It's giving me energy. It's detoxing me. It's actually a great little recipe that I found on the Google. So this is why it's important for us to have these conversations, because there are things people can do. Like what you're doing is you are actually working with people who are remediating the soil and remediating their farms and figuring out
Exactly.
how to take back our planet, because we're under assault. There's no stopping it. Fukushima cannot be stopped.
Yes.
So we have to learn how to live with it the
Yes.
best that we can.
And what I see when you're talking about taking cider, apple cider vinegar, is you're alkalizing your system, which
That's
means
right.
you're helping the microbiome in your belly to do its job. So again, traditionally that microbiome has been what defends us against everything. And when we eat a lot of sugar or a lot of carbohydrates or even too much meat, we are assaulting and stopping those microbes from doing their job.
That's right. Actually, the article that I read that shared this recipe that I'm using was talking about your gut bacteria, that fundamentally is the reason that we can't overcome these types of onslaughts, because they're low-level onslaughts. The reason we can't do it is because our gut bacteria is not very healthy. So the whole idea
Yes.
is to rebalance our gut bacteria. Well, Charlotte, would you share with people some of your ideas about how we can regenerate and reestablish our ecosystem? Some of the work that you're doing on that.
Yes, and like I said, we are setting up a program, and that the whole manual for that will probably be out within about 2 weeks. So we're setting up a program because there's a huge amount of interest. What happened back here in Massachusetts last year? They had a huge drought, so they couldn't water their lawns. Many of the farmers didn't have the water that they needed to bring in their crops. So they got very interested in what I'm teaching, because with these methods, the carbon buildup that you get in the soil from using these microbes will hold the rain all year long in that soil. Is that making sense?
You're saying that the... Well, you know, I'm not a science person, so I'm kind of slow on this one. Right. So what you're saying is that the microbes allow the soil to retain the moisture at a longer rate?
Yes. Yes. The microbes, especially the mycorrhizal, they form this stuff called humus that is makes carbon, and then that carbon holds the water, holds in a good situation, in a resilient ecosystem, will hold 200,000 gallons of water per acre. So you could go for 6 months without water, or even 12 months without water, and still have lovely vegetables. They do this in India all the time.
Wow. No water for 6 months?
Yes.
Just with adding microbes?
Yeah. Well, yes. In India, 78% of their crops are grown without water. And the normal way that they have rain is 2 times a year in what they call these monsoons. So you'll have 6 months without any rain. And what they've done, and they've done this for thousands of years, is they use these microbe teas to make sure that their soil has plenty of microbes in it. And that's pretty much the only fertilizing that they do. And then the microbe partners working with the plants is everything that those plants need, including the minerals, to have amazingly healthy crops that give us all the secondary plant metabolites, that don't have bugs, and they don't need watering for 6 months at a time.
Well, is there any way to remediate the nuclear pollution that's constantly falling down on us through this process?
Well, yes. That is what, as I said to you before, that's what ecosystems have done throughout time. And the specifics, I was at a conference and I talked to a really big-time microbiologist. And so, he said that microbes are not alchemists. So they can't take away the nuclear, toxicity, but they can stabilize it. And I don't know exactly what he meant.
Well, they're in a state of fission, so they're not stable. That's the thing. Right now, what we're being bombarded with is a state of fission. That's why the show's called The Age of Fission, because these radionuclides are constantly exploding, right? So maybe he means it'll keep them from exploding.
Yes.
Wow.
And I am planning on finding out more about that, and I just did talk to another microbiologist, and he basically said that, again, these mycorrhizals and these other bacteria and this carbon, what they do is they choose certain plants and they put the toxic material into those plants and wall it off. And that is throughout history what's happened with toxins. I mean, there's been a lot of toxic situations. And I don't think there's ever been so many all at once. And I'm not recommending that we don't stop the ones that we're having. However, we can go on living and making ourselves more healthy.
You disagree with Guy McPherson, who says that we're going to be dying in mass amounts in 10 years. In 10 years, that really life on this planet only has 10 years. That's essentially what he's saying. He used to say that there was 30 years left.
If we continue to take out ecosystems and to not have any ecosystem protection, then yes, I'd agree with that. And we're decimating ecosystems right and left. But it is, that's who, in our world, that's whose job it is to detoxify. And so that's why there's 41.5 million acres of lawns in the U.S. And that's why, and the other thing that you and I have talked about, Lonnie, is that it's one thing to say what's wrong, and it's really important to know what's wrong. But most of us need to be able to do something positive every day, or we get sick. We get bodily sick, we get emotionally sick. And that's why doing something like putting natives and perennials in your yard is something that people might want to do. Am I making sense?
Yeah, so I'd like you to say that again, because that's actually a very important statement, because this is why we do have a lot of sick people, because people just ruminate. And I hear this very frequently from people who say, how can you possibly do that radio show all the time? Doesn't it make you depressed? Doesn't it make you feel unhappy? I actually feel empowered. I feel like I'm doing something, like I'm sharing some positive information. I'm getting information out. I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, it is frustrating because we don't have answers, but that's why I'm glad that you're here to help us. So what you're saying essentially is like, isn't that like kind of like the ultimate hippie thing though? Like just plant some flowers and you'll feel good. I mean, but isn't, you know
interesting.
What I'm saying?
Interesting idea.
I mean, isn't that essentially what you're saying? Like, we do need to take action. So whether we're planting in our garden or speaking out and publicly engaging or whatever it is, writing a book or whatever it is that we need to do, it's important for us, for our immune system, for us to take action to do something positive that we view as positive in our life.
Yes.
And that's been shown to be healthy.
Yeah. And again, I would go to our microbiome. That not only does it help to eat that concoction you're eating, including apple cider vinegar, but it helps to do something that you believe is positive.
Right.
And it gets your energy moving. It gets your healthy bacteria taking care of things.
Well, Charlotte, do you think that our thoughts are things that us thinking that something is healthy for us actually makes it on a quantum level maybe a little bit healthier?
I would say that's probably true, but I'm not the expert in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, I have all of my life
I mean, I get depressed sometimes and I go to bed, and then when I wake up and start doing things again, then I'm happy and my life is working and productive, and my body's generally, I'm 72, my body's generally holding together and,
you're 72.
And allowing me to, yeah.
Wow.
And I just started this huge project, 20-acre, pretty much 20-acre project by myself out in the desert.
Wow.
So, and
which also means that if anybody on the West Coast wants to come and interview with Charlotte to be a helper on her farm, I'm sure she'd love to talk to you.
Yes. Okay. And we really, even more than being a helper, we really want to be able to help all the rest of the people who want to start doing these projects. Because there's all these farmers who aren't able to get the water that they need, and so they need to be shown, you know, how to get from here to there.
And what kind of project is it? Like, are you suggesting that people in their own communities go out and show farmers how to use microbes to help remediate the land?
Yes, only farmers aren't going to listen unless they're learning from a farmer.
Right. That's exactly right.
So, but if somebody knows a farmer really well, and if I mean, you know, I could send them my video. I could send, you know, I'm going to make a video for farmers. I have a friend that I met down in Virginia who's working with farmers, working with most of the things I'm working with. So she also has some videos that could be shown to farmers. So that if people do know farmers, and also, this is really exciting. There's videos and audio from this association, the Bio-Nutrient Association, where they're teaching farmers how to grow healthy food. And that's really valuable because, I mean, you know, if you're going to eat the stuff, you might as well, help you.
So what do you mean healthy food? What do you mean by that? You mean non-GMO food?
No. I'm saying almost all organic food, almost all industrial food, whether it's GMO or not, is not not grown with microbes. So it's not making the secondary plant metabolites that are necessary to feed our microbiome. That actually takes care of things like cancer and heart disease and all of the problems.
So it is super important to add microbes to your garden and to all of your plants. It is like the fundamental, once you put the plants in, the before you finalize it and walk away for a few days, put microbes on the garden.
Yes.
And how often do you put the microbes on the garden?
Well, it depends somewhat on the rain that you get, or like what where I am, because I don't have any rain. I have sprayed 13 times, so I'm spraying pretty much every 10 days. When I lived in Eugene and I worked there, and we were watering our gardens, I only had to spray once, because then the microbes would take off and they would grow so quickly that, you know, we would make like 5 inches of humus in the soil in that 1 year. So it depends on how much water you're using, and the opposite. The number of microbes that you spray on makes it so that you don't need to water.
So you use a sprayer to spray the microbes instead of just pouring
them on
the plant.
My 20 acres. When I did it in the little gardens, I was using a watering can.
Okay.
Which is just putting the microbes into a watering can.
And you just put the microbes near the roots, not on the plants.
It doesn't matter. They do good. They talk about it, a foliar spray when you put it on the green leaves. So it helps that way too. But the foliar, the green leaves actually goes on the ground, and so you can do it any way you want.
Oh, okay, okay. You can tell I'm definitely not the farmer or gardener. Actually, you have showed me the little bit of gardening that I do know, so thanks. I mean, honestly. So this is a fascinating idea I have about this idea about taking off all of our grass. Could you imagine the upset that that would have across America? Imagine what America would look like if people, even if people just took out their backyards and put in indigenous plants. I mean,
yeah, I don't think that would bother people so much. And actually, what they're talking about here is they just had this big YIMBY event, and they're talking. So what everybody does here is there's a lot of leaves.
Here is where,
that's true,
Charlotte?
In parts of Eugene. I'm in the Boston area right now.
Okay.
And they have a lot of leaves, and Eugene has that also. And people just hate to see leaves. You know, they want them all picked up. And of course, part, and what happens if you leave the leaves on, the leaves will kill the lawn, which is what we want. So this one pretty famous person was talking about how we have to get used to seeing leaves on the ground, you know. And the way to do that is to think of it as the forest and how wonderful, how much we love forests. And so, yes, this is a very different way for things to look. And speaking of that, I was, I actually had planted before I went to India 8 different fruit forests, but they were never like 20 feet tall, and I never got the sense of what it would be like to be inside of them. So even though I really loved the idea of fruit forests, I wasn't sure that I would like being inside of one. So it wasn't until I was in India, and they have, you know, thousands of year old fruit forests, that I actually got to be in one, and I absolutely loved it. So that was good for me to know that. I mean, I do love fields of green. And I also love, you know, the smells and feeling of being inside of this wonderfully happy food forest. So
wow.
Some of the ideas of the food of the forest, and then, you know, to see all these birds and flowers and fruits and nuts growing. Anyway, it was and herbs and all these smells. It was just amazing.
All side
experience.
By side, or are they like in
yes.
little rows? When you're talking food forest, are they like little rows of this, rows of that? I mean, or are they all mixed up?
Well, in India, and the way I like to do them, they're pretty random.
Mm-hmm.
And they like to be together. It's like, it's really like when you go into the forest, when you go into a forest that's not planted, it's pretty random. It's not all lined up.
Right.
And these things were just amazing. I mean, it would be like every step I took, there'd be 6 more plants. And I'm like, oh, what's this one? And what's this one? And
But that actually kind of requires that you know what the plants are, isn't it? Like, that's one of the lost arts in our country, is just plant identification, understanding what's edible and what's not edible. Like, I took a ecology of the forest class, and we went out into the forest and identified plants and learned which plants were edible. Like, the Doug firs are an edible plant. Did you know that? I did not know that. So
there's
foods, and my teacher said if you eat too much of it, you know, it won't make you sick, but you get diarrhea. So you don't want to eat too much of it. It runs right through your system. But there's foods, and these were foods that natives added to their diet. Like when they were introduced to the Western way of eating, they were shocked at the grotesque flavors. There's I read in my book, they were actually mortified that the Westerners actually ate their horses. And, you know, because I guess that's what they did in those days. If when the horse died, you ate the horse. And they were mortified at the way that we ate, the food that we ate to them had absolutely no real flavor. So, you know, and then we decimated our forest, and, you know, all the food that was actually really here. One of the reasons that the Northwest had permanent structures was because there was such an abundance of food here. It was the only area in the United States where people could just actually live, because you, even here now in Eugene, practically every backyard has blackberries growing in the winter. It's hard to get rid of them. Like, they just, this area just wants to feed people. You know, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
So where you're at on Eastern Oregon, is it that same hardiness of plant growth?
Oh, no, it's a desert. So what grows in the main in the desert is juniper and sage and maybe five other plants. And so even things like blackberries or elderberries, the only place we have them is right next to the brooks. So there's...
So is your plants with microbes, are they growing and thriving?
Well, they're growing slowly. Where I irrigated, which is this 40 by 50 area where I have a little nursery patch, I got 5 inches of humus this year. But I couldn't even see what I got out on the 20 acres. However, I had a major change. I had, even though they were weeds, I had weeds growing in July, which nowhere else did I see, not on this property or on any of the other properties were any green weeds growing in July, except where there was water. So I know we're getting more carbon in that soil.
From the microbes.
And that's, yeah. And so I'm going to start spraying microbes again in the spring, but I'm also going to plant all my seeds, which is all kinds of nuts and fruits like apples and peaches and cherries, and also things that don't need so much water like pomegranates, and then blackberries, and anyway, currants, all sorts of berries.
Well, so let me ask you this.
And all sorts of herbs.
Are there any other areas, Charlotte, where they are in desert regions where they're using this microbe technology?
Not that I know of.
So this is truly an experiment. This is really an experiment in a way.
Well, like I said, in India they're using it. So,
okay.
But no place in the United States.
Okay, so it is
in
known.
India,
it's known to have worked. It does work. It's just nobody here has used it. It's novel in the United States, but the rest, large portions of India have incorporated it into their farming practices.
Yes.
Wow.
And in India now, you know, they've been sold the Green Revolution. So except in the tribal part, these things aren't being used. Well, there's a major teacher who is teaching still these uses of microbes. And so there's a lot of vegetable farmers that are using these techniques. But it is not considered... you know, the new farmer technique in India, anyhow. Am I making sense? In other words, they're selling just fertilizers and tractors and irrigation systems and all those
standard
things that
Western
are failing
practices,
us.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
so,
of course they're doing
that. But there are people, in fact, you know, this person that did his food forest with no fertilizer and no water in India, so he was one of my teachers there. His name is Narsama Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
And he's teaching, he's a permaculture teacher, and he teaches all over India these methods. So it's a little like here, where there's now the learning edge, the leading edge is with these people that are rejuvenating the land and restoring the land and getting better yields and better nutrients and better detoxifying results.
Post-GMO.
Well, it's pre-GMO, really.
But these places, they're not, are they using GMO seeds?
No.
No GMO
no,
seeds?
No, basically, the GMO seeds are sick. I mean, they will not, they won't work. So you have to use good seeds.
Wow.
Seeds that haven't been messed with.
Are you saying that GMO seeds don't thrive in microbes?
Yes. I mean, they've been trained. They've been selected to thrive in chemicals.
Wow.
So they've been selected to not feed us. I mean, it's
that's
just
weird.
Crazy.
When you put it like that, it reminds me of the artificial intelligence, how it's being trained to eliminate the best parts of the human spirit. You know, like the AI has no feelings, no emotions, no love, no impromptu, no spontaneous, unpredictable behavior. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that makes humans so completely amazing is, really, you think you know somebody, but you never know. People, like, do stuff that come out of the blue, and guess what? Out of that comes innovation and new thought and new ways of thinking. And that's what helps our, that's our spark of creation. So what you're saying, that's why the GMOs make people sick. Because the seeds
it's
are sick.
It's one of the reasons. Yeah. Well, I mean, the main reason is that it messes with our microbiome. And it, and I know people that have, I mean, you know, they have aches, they have depression, and they just quit all GMO foods. And all that goes away.
Wow.
But speaking of that, I want to talk about the big picture, because there's a person named Toby Hemingway who is talking about three kinds of ways of getting our food. One is the hunter-gatherer way, and the next way he calls the horticulture method, and the third he calls agriculture. And his position is that agriculture will always go to what I call industrial agriculture. And it's an industrial agriculture goes with a system that is scarcity and fear. And then he talks about this horticulture system. And the horticulture system actually is what my farm is involved with, because it's a food forest, it's an ecosystem, working with the ecosystem, and working with minimal, so it's not a lot of heavy equipment. It's, anyway, and he says that leads to abundance and love. And all the things that you were just talking about, all that creativity is coming out of those type of systems.
Wow. So it sounds like that is actually our only path forward, considering post-Fukushima.
Yes.
Because
and
really,
that is because those systems will clean up the toxins. Those systems will allow us. So, and that's another major difference in those two systems. The one, the industrial agriculture, and we have learned to rely on experts to solve everything, and we have learned to rely on technology to solve everything. But, you know, let's just say there's, let's just even say there's 1,000 people with the brilliance to come up with that technology and this and that. However, with the other system, with the horticulture system, everyone has a contribution to make, because everyone has creativity. And you know, in my way of seeing things, that we're all born to contribute. And every microbe, every animal has a piece of the whole. And so that's one of the crimes of decimating these animal populations and even the microbe populations. We don't know what their place was in the whole ecosystem. And we know that everybody has a place. And so we need to value each contribution of each being. Anyway, it's a very different way to look at life.
Yeah, well,
and
I
again,
mean,
with the industrial agriculture, it's like only those people at the top are valuable. It's crazy.
Well, we're considered assets on their balance sheet. I say that in the intro on purpose because, I, you know, it's funny. I came up with that phrase during the Occupy movement. We did a protest out in front of Bank of America, and I made a protest sign that said that. Assets are not humans are not assets on a balance sheet. But after the protest, I realized, you know what? We are assets on a balance sheet to them. That's actually not true. We think we're not, but we are. This is why they're allowing Fukushima to go on. This is why they do the nuclear pollution. This is why they put out so much disinformation about GMOs, about nuclear, about chemical, because we are disposable. We're their little lab rats. We're there for their profit, period. I mean, we read about
Well,
the
in this
pyramids.
case, yeah, you're saying it that way, but who's the them? There's nobody that's protected from this. I mean, it's going to come down on them as well as all of us.
True that.
You're taking the whole system down.
It's true that. Well, you
So,
know, Rome burned while, you know, I mean, Rome
yes.
was burning while they were partying, right? So it's the same
Yep.
exact thing. And unfortunately, I mean, this is why this movement is so important, the whole thing about reestablishing our ecosystem and taking it back, because just because that's their paradigm does not mean it has to be our paradigm.
Right.
That's what
In
I
fact,
say.
if we want to live, we have to choose this paradigm.
And this is why this imp and people can start this in their own little backyards right now. They can get microbes. You
Yep.
know, Chuck Heineman sells microbes. There are microbes all over the place. It's not that hard to find microbes. And you know, it's in and but you can destroy your microbes. Like, don't you think that it's easy to like contaminate your microbes, like especially the liquid microbes? You put something in there that's wrong, and you know what I mean? Can't that destroy the microbes? So it's important for us to understand, to learn how to use them. But it's not rocket science. It's easy.
Yes.
You know, it's
And
not
at some
water.
point, do we want to tell people, like, there's ways to buy microbes and there's ways to make microbes? So, do you have a website that you can put this stuff on?
I'm actually building a website for No Nukes Northwest. We're hoping to have it up shortly in the middle of January. I'm actually building one, and I will put it up.
Okay.
But if you give
Okay.
me some links, I can add it to this show, to the podcast. If there's any kind of links or anything that you can give me, I can add them to this podcast.
Okay, well, I can do that, but I need to do it afterwards. Does that work?
Yeah, of course, of course.
Okay.
So that's really awesome. We have about 11 minutes left. I thought I'd just let you know, give you some of a time frame, because we keep veering into different ideas.
Yes.
So Charlotte, one of the things that you did when I met you here was you were putting gardens all over Eugene, Oregon. In fact, you put a garden in my backyard, and
Yes.
it was the first time I had ever grown food, frankly. I had never in my life even thought that I could grow food. I didn't understand what that mean. And in fact, to this day, I have food growing in my garden, and I'm still kind of afraid to eat it. And that's how brainwashed I've been. To be honest, I eat it, but every time I eat it, I'm like, well, I hope this is just as good as what I'm buying in the store. That's really honestly what's in the back of my head.
Wow. And in fact, it's probably 50 times better than what you buy in the store, even if you buy that high-priced organic stuff.
Well, okay then. Thank you for telling me that. That'll make me feel
But
better.
that's kind of a paradigm shift. I mean, it's like
It
when we
is.
when I was little and my mother made my clothes, I didn't think they were as good as store-bought clothes.
Yes, it is a paradigm shift. And you know, one of the things is us about us learning how to, I mean, the reason I bring this up is because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't grow gardens and think, well, it's just as good as if I go to the store, but it's actually not. And it's not that hard to have a garden. It's really easy. Dirt, water, microbes, plant the plants, and boom, they're done. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, like right now, I actually do have a winter garden that I did not put under a greenhouse. I didn't build a little greenhouse. All of my kale survived. The lettuces have survived, the garlic has, all of it, it's all survived. I really did not lose anything during the freeze. So, and maybe that has to do with the microbes. I don't know.
It does. It does because a lot of people there in Eugene, their gardens are dead.
Wow. Well, look, this is the thing. These things actually can take action. We can take action. This is why it's important for us to learn how. Is there organizations or some place where people can go, some website that you would recommend? That's kind of, I know I wasn't hadn't prepared to ask you that, but do you know of a website where people can go and learn about this a little bit more?
Well, my website, which is called Hands handsonpermaculture1.org. And hands is like the end of our arms that we grasp things with. Hands on permaculture1.org. So they can learn some there. And the other thing, I was talking to you last time when we were talking about a website that would coordinate all our efforts, because one of the things that I was feeling when I got back from India, and I'm doing something that nobody really understands, when I was, you know, trying to work in the desert without irrigating, everybody's, it's just over their heads, and so they weren't very interested. And as a woman, I really feel, and I connected that with moms and their kids. In other words, when nobody responds to what you're doing, you think you should do something else. I mean, that's what women learn. They're not so like men that they can do something like Alan Savory, who started something called holistic management. It was almost 60 years before people really started doing what he was teaching them how to do. And I was realizing I just don't have that. And so what I wanted was a website that would, I could say what I was doing, and at least I would be in that hole. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I have found a website like that. And people, and then, and on that website you can also ask for, that's the other thing that I've seen a lot of women need. They might want to start an organization in their town where they help people start gardens, but they don't have everything that they need to do that. And so on a website like this, you could put up that you have this and you need these other three things. And then the whole website is all an umbrella for what our contributions are and giving us credit for those contributions, which I think most people need.
That's not on my website,
but I will send it to you and you can post it, that big website.
I will, and I just went to it. It is actually your article, Hands on Permaculture, Dryland Agriculture with Microbe Inoculation. Looks awesome.
Yeah.
But what you're suggesting is that's maybe what we need, is an active and engaging website where we can go in and post information to share with other people and talk about what our needs are and what we can do.
Exactly, yes. But like I said, I have been trying to do this for about a month, ever since I talked to you about this, maybe it was even 2 months ago. And everybody that I talked to, I have a lot of people that like my ideas, but everybody that talked to said, do you know what size of database that, I mean, you know, I can't even imagine that. Well, somebody has done it, so that's why that's really exciting.
Oh, good.
So I'll send you that, and you can put that on.
Oh, I would love that. That would be really awesome, because I will add it to the links here. So,
okay.
Well, that's really great. Thank you, Charlotte, for joining us. You know, I encourage people to get active and take action. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's at all effective to call our elected officials on this issue of saving our food supply? Do you think it makes any impact at all to contact elected officials?
We were actually talking about that here, and a woman that had been doing quite a bit of that found that they were not very creative. So unless she took to them exactly the methods that they needed to do, it was not very useful.
Hmm.
And now there's an organization here that has a lot of those methods that are written up, and so, you know, I think that would be more useful, is to call and say, you know, would they look at this?
Give them the information. This is exactly what Donna Gilmore says that we need to do with our elected officials. Yeah, call them, but we have to tell them the facts, because they have been misinformed or basically not informed at all. You know, they're going on some assumptions that are completely inaccurate, completely false. So it's up to us to bring them the information, mail it to them, email it to them, make sure they get the actual documents, because there is a lot of documentation that's even provided for by the government, but our elected officials don't read those documents.
I I mean, you know, I was very involved with this from the standpoint when I was a chiropractor, and people would come to me. One example of somebody, how much time do I have, Lonnie? Do I have 3 minutes for this story?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Okay. Well, one example was a woman that came to me, and her son was 5 years old, and he was just, he couldn't even walk straight. He was taking Dilantin, and he would have seizures. And I do this, when I was a chiropractor, did this huge intake interview of about 7 pages. And one of the things that I noticed as I was reading through it was that all of the siblings in her family, the mothers, were allergic to milk. So I looked at the boy, and I said to the mother, did you ever try taking him off milk? And she said, no, the doctor said he wasn't allergic to milk. I said, I'm sorry, medical doctors don't know enough to say whether the child is allergic to milk or not. So what I'd recommend that you do is take him off milk. And she did. And then I said, about 2 weeks later, okay, now he needs to start coming off Dilantin. So she took him to his doctor, and the doctor says, okay. And he was angry, and he said, okay, let's just take him off Dilantin. Well, she called me and said that he said that, and I said, I'm so glad you called me, because everyone knows that taking him off Dilantin will cause seizures. So you need to find another doctor who will slowly lower the dose.
Wow.
And that's what she did. 6 months later, the kid was riding a bicycle totally off all medications to stop seizures, totally no seizures. And so I don't know what got me started on this, but that, but I also, medical doctors, because they're doing these amazing tinkerings all the time with, you know, these very fancy systems, they don't know the simple things.
Yeah, well, they're not actually allowed to know them. They're not actually allowed to prescribe, say, herbs for you. That's against the rules of the AMA.
Yes, it is. They have it. So, it's a standard of practice. Yeah.
So it's really, and those herbs actually do really work. Like, they cannot tell us that. It's a backward system of ill health. Well, look, we're at about a minute left. You've been listening to Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. We've been speaking with Charlotte Anthony. Her website is handsonpermaculture1.org. Please go there, learn about permaculture, learn about how to help us remediate our planet, and let's take our lives back. Charlotte, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Lonnie, it's been great. Bye.
Okay, well, I really appreciate it. Put your courage feet on. Everybody take some action. Your action does matter. Your voice does matter. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Gibson, and I am the host of Antel.